Hey everyone, it's Mo. Did you miss me last week? Of course you didn't. Why would you miss me? Our sound was immaculate last week, so I didn't need to come in and interrupt your podcast listening experience with my stupid rambly warning type stuff. And now I have to come back in because the internet gods were assholes this week. I mean, not like episode 14 assholes, but they were assholes. And so once again, some of our audio is kind of like a bad phone call, but you're gonna live with it. You know you are, and you know why. Come on, say it with me, because you love us. Enjoy the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 17 of Bitter Infertiles. I'm Mo.
I'm Christy,
and I'm Shelley.
So we had kind of a different show last week, and the thing that we didn't do last week, which we're overdue for, is some updates. So let's just jump straight into that. How are you doing, Shelley? How's everything?
Everything is going along. I'm 17 weeks today, which is ironic since this is our 17th episode. I just put that together. But yeah, 17 weeks. I'm really starting to show, which is weird and cool and just like, something to wrap your brain around.
Yeah, the bump is fun.
The bump is officially here and
Yeah.
people are noticing. I ran into my dog walker at the grocery store a few hours ago and she noticed under my coat, which I was like, really? I don't know. I was wearing a big winter coat and I was like, I don't know. She might have like seen stuff around the house and just felt like she wanted to acknowledge it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, I'm doing good. I mean, still feeling like pretty crappy all the time, but I've kind of resigned myself to that might just be how I feel for my pregnancy.
Yeah, my mother actually talked about the fact and, well, tortured us all for the fact that she was sick all 9 months with all three of her pregnancies. And the plus of it was when
More than
she
one
stepped on
pregnancy,
the,
like.
like, oh yeah, all three pregnancies. Which, that it was funny enough. That seemed to be the thing that deterred my parents from kicking out more kids. The thing that I remember that her talking about was the one benefit of being that sick was all this pregnancy weight that women talk about gaining. She basically gained enough to sustain babies, and then that was it. And so actually, weirdly enough, she dropped weight with all of her pregnancies,
See,
which
I don't
I
know if
mean
that's gonna be the case for me though, because like I don't throw up every day. Like I maybe throw up like once a week. I just feel like crap every day, but like in order to get through the crappy feeling, I have to eat constantly. Like that is the only way to
Right. But
get.
there's a difference between eating constantly in order to be able to sustain things and eating constantly because you feel like, you're going to eat everything and anything. Because I think you're still probably selecting on foods, right? There are certain foods that you have to avoid.
Oh yeah, I cannot have dairy at all. I mean, I mostly eat like fruits and veggies. I do eat like pretty healthy, but I do eat a lot of calories because I'm eating constantly. I am definitely gaining weight.
Well, I mean, it's the way I look at it. It's like you gain weight, you don't gain weight. It's I mean, if you're gonna be sick the whole pregnancy, that's really sucky. But it's we put up with what we put up with. I think Shelley, you're pretty resigned to that fact at this point too.
Totally. I mean, you don't have a choice. And I was thinking the other day, like, I mean, I was such before infertility, before all of this, I was such a like type A, everything had to go my way, you know what I mean, kind of person, wanted to control everything. And infertility like made me take a step back from that. And again, pregnancy is doing the same thing to me. And I just, and I'm sure parenthood's going to be the same way, you know. It is what it is, but we have a sort of big ultrasound coming up this week, which my husband can't come to because he'll be out of town. But I mean, I'm not quite 18 weeks, but it's like going to be the longer anatomy scan, which we don't know the anatomy. Oh, we already know the gender, but they should be able to see like everything in a lot more detail than we've seen,
right.
including maybe be able to tell a little bit more about the gastroschisis and mm-hmm. a little bit more of its nature. I mean, it's still early for that. That's still going to evolve. Like, every ultrasound, they'll be able to see more and more what's going on. But it should be interesting. I'm a little bit nervous, but hopefully everything.
You're not going alone, I hope.
No, I am.
You are?
Are you? You can't even get one of your parents to come up, or
they're in somebody? Florida.
Oh.
Vacation, yeah. It's like during the middle of the day. So like any friend, I don't even have that many close friends nearby, and anyone would have to like take off work, which no one is gonna be willing to do.
Yeah, but I'm with Mo on this one. If you can get somebody to come with you, it would be good. I mean, I would totally take off work. Problem is, I would take off work and fly across the country.
Yeah, I was just about to say, dude, I'll come with you, but that might be a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll see if I could find anyone, but I think I'll be fine.
Yeah, but it's just kind of sucky to do that kind of stuff alone. It's just not a good idea, I think, in general, to go through that kind of stuff alone.
I just like having the extra set of ears there because I forget things that are said to me, and forget to ask things. But we'll see.
See what you can do, because I think you'd be much better off with that. But with trying to find somebody, hey, have your dog walker come along. Better than nobody.
She has.
I love it.
Or
even a conference call, like even just sitting down and saying, look, I'm gonna call my husband or whoever, and we're just gonna
that's a good idea. Like maybe
have the phone,
phone Skype or something.
And I mean, I know that they tend to not like cell phones in there, but in this case,
see what you can do about phone Skype. I think that might be a really good solution.
Yeah, that might be possible, actually. We should try that.
Yeah, totally. Okay, good. So do you want to tell us the gender? Because
podcasters
don't know.
Right, that's true. So we found out, kind of early, really early. Found out around 14 weeks because we did a special test. I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast, but it's a special blood test that's generally only available to high-risk patients that tests for Down syndrome and trisomy 13 and 18. And it also was able to tell gender from just a blood test, which we didn't even really realize was possible. Mm-hmm. We got the results like 3.5 weeks ago now, almost 4 weeks ago, and we found out that we're having a little boy.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Congratulations. But I will say that blood test that you did, Shelley, is there's actually a company that's been developing these, and the idea is that there are actually fetal cells that circulate in the mother's blood. We now know that, and we can do all sorts of wonderful things like karyotyping and figuring out genetic information simply by doing a blood test. So it's actually supposed to be able to go so far to start replacing like amniocentesis and CVS. Which, as people will know, amnio, that involves a really big needle that they guide into your uterus. So if you could just do a blood test instead and get all that information, that's the way they want to go. And so far, it seems like it's working out really great.
But there are some ethical issues about it. There was a point in Israel, this was supposed to be made available to the public, to the general public, like as an elective blood test.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of people, not that, it's not like we're some sort of third world country that we have a problem with boys, with girls getting born or something. But some people brought up some ethical issues about, people doing, being gender selective.
And then going off early on and doing abortions because of it. Yeah. So I've heard that too.
Yeah.
So one of that's been really the big hang up is that they don't want people doing these tests, getting information early, and then going off and getting abortions, because it's been a huge issue in India or other countries where boys are very valued. And even in the United States, the opposite thing is actually girls. They want little girls. And I don't put it past some of these people that are nutty enough to want a specific gender to abort their babies. So yeah, that has been the hang up. So right now they're prescribing, just as you said, Shelley, for only specific cases. And usually it's in cases where they would do an amnio or do a CBS that then they sit down and we'll do this. So that's good to know. It's not something that's widely available, which, you know, is good. So
But
you're having a boy.
Yay, boy.
Yeah.
Yay. I know. It's so crazy.
Yeah, it's totally insane. Your husband's happy.
Oh, he's thrilled. Okay. He totally wanted a boy. And guy's getting his boy. So
the guys usually do.
I know. It's a thing.
Yeah, it really is. Okay, so Christy, you've got big news too.
I did, yeah. So this last week, one, I'm feeling loads better. I hate suppression medication, and as I get further out from suppression medication, I'm so much better. But we did our embryo transfer, and I don't know if we talked on the podcast about one of my biggest fears with all this is up to date. All of our embryos had survived the thaw. So it was one of those things, like, I felt like we were playing Russian roulette with, okay, what's going to happen. And thankfully, between Mo texting me constantly and basically telling me to stop it, which was good. Shelley did too. But also just really embracing this attitude of it's going to be what it's going to be and there's not much I can change. And then the fact that they also moved the transfer back later in the day, which I had no idea that my attitude would be that much different from doing a 3 p.m. transfer versus doing a 10 a.m. transfer, but it was. And so it was a much more relaxed day. Anyways, the short of it is both of them survived. And we're hatching when we got there. I mean, it was amazing. And both of them were transferred. And the thing I didn't share on my blog is this was actually the first transfer of the year for this clinic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
So they were stoked. They were so stoked. Like, it was a beautiful day in Seattle.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, people in the city were just so happy because the sun was out. You could see the mountains and Seattleites. I mean, it's gray here 9 months out of the year, so any sunburst, people just get giddy. So people were giddy to begin with, and then to see those embryos, like, everybody in the clinic was just kind of on a high, and we were too. Yay. We were really happy. So the transfer,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. So the transfer went smooth, and then I've just been camped on the couch the entire time. I've gotten zero work done, which is going to be really bad next week. But you know what? It will be what it's going to be. And in the meantime, it's just been, sitting down and really embracing this thought of, I mean, I've done the cautiously optimistic, which, come on, cautiously optimistic is telling everybody you're hopeful, but the reality is you're running through worst case scenarios in your head all the time.
Right.
And I'm just tired of it. So we've kind of thrown...
I've never really thought about that before. I have to say that's a really beautiful sentiment, Christy, that cautiously optimistic is not really optimistic at all. It's more cautious than optimistic.
No, I mean, you're running through, and I do this all the time. Like, you tell everybody you're optimistic, but you're running through all the worst case scenarios in your head.
Yeah.
And I've done it with every single one of my IVF cycles. So this is the first cycle where we've basically have thrown that out the window and been like, screw it, it's going to work. And I tell people this not on the end of the fact that, I'm going to be so surprised if this doesn't work. I mean, it's going to be painful if next Saturday comes and this fails. I'm going to be heartbroken. But the thing is that I'm always heartbroken anyway, so why am I spending the next 2 weeks living in that pain?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's a really good point. And Christy, you and I have to, have a continued conversation about whether you will pee on stuff and when you will pee on stuff.
Yeah.
Which, is a whole discussion.
It is.
Because I think you should pee on stuff early.
I know you do. But you're also, and this is the thing we will talk about. You have a tendency to pee on things on an earlier end where Gray wants to fly out and take them away from you.
Yes, perhaps. Although, and we'll talk about this in a second, it was justified.
It was
sometimes peeing on stuff early is justified.
Sometimes peeing on stuff early is justified. That's true. It's just the other thing that is different about this cycle is I am on two types of injections. And both of them hurt. I mean, the PIO, I knew that one was going to hurt, but the other one, so I'm on a blood thinner because of my diagnosis. And it's not the fact that it's a sub-Q injection that hurts, it's the medication. It stinks. So one of the things I'm worried about is if I test early and it comes up negative, how am I going to...
you're going to want to stop meds.
Yeah,
right?
How am I going to remain being compliant? Especially since now I'm up to like 2 cc's of PIO every night. And the Lovenox, I mean, I've got, Shelly, I'll send you guys a link of this bruise I have. It is the mother of all bruises. It has scared the crap out of everybody that has seen it because it's huge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw a picture. You texted me a picture earlier today. It is not pretty.
No, it's not. I mean,
that happened, though. I had that, too.
Yeah, but there's bruises, and this thing, like, takes over one half side of my entire body. It's big.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like I came
it's
down and
big showed and
I came down and showed Gray and he looked at me and he was like, "What did you do?" Like just looked at me in horror. And he freaked out and like documented it and everything. Like I've had bruises. This is the mother of bruises. So and it's from one bad
news. We'll put a link up on the blog.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, and listeners, we'll spare you a picture of Christy's bruises. But just take my word for it. It looked big and hurty.
Yeah.
That's basically what it comes down
to. Well, the problem is I missed it. Yeah, I missed it. Anyways, the only reason I knew is I was preparing for, I was putting on my pajamas and I looked, I was like, oh, that's new.
I always kind of liked having a good bruise. Probably sounds weird. But I always am like, I like bruises sometimes. That's weird. Sorry.
You like bruises?
I'm just
wearing
my reflex. Sometimes I like to have a good bruise. Yeah, okay. I'm like, look at my sweet bruise. So, I don't know. Don't put that on the podcast.
I will consider editing it out because that's really amusing, actually. So you know.
Wait, I thought that was a thing. You guys don't like to have a good bruise?
No. Then again, you know, Shelley, I think to each his own. You like bruises. I like peeing on stuff.
Okay.
You know, each of us has our own thing.
It's war wounds. It's all a matter of what your war wound is going to be. So.
Although peeing on stuff does not constitute war wounds. It just constitutes lots of pee on lots of stuff.
Oh, I don't know. I think the psychological trauma afterwards. This is me.
Yeah,
so this is why we talk.
True.
For Christy, it's war wounds.
Yeah.
It is. It definitely is. So, anyways, let's talk. Okay, Mo.
Yeah.
Your turn.
You're up.
Do I have to?
You have to, because you made me confess.
Yeah.
At least 6 episodes ago.
Yeah.
And now it's my fun turn. It's my turn to pick on you. Okay, it's confession time, hon. You can't keep this secret.
Yeah, I can't. I've been wondering how long I'm going to have to, which is really weird because I've never wanted to keep this kind of thing secret before. But here we go. Okay, I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm pregnant.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm pregnant. I'm pregnant number 5. This is pregnancy number 5, people. Yes, yes, number 5. No babies yet.
No babies, but you've named this pregnancy.
Yes, we have named this pregnancy. Actually, this was courtesy of my amazing husband. We've named it Baby Lawn 5.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, cause
wait, I don't get it.
Okay, so there's a sci-fi, there's old sci-fi series from the 90s called Babylon 5.
Oh
yeah.
Okay.
And so to make things very apropos, we've been marathoning that show. Like my husband decided that it was time that he go back and watch it because I watched it as a teenager and I loved it. So he's like, okay, I'm gonna watch it now, and I'm like, okay, I'll watch it with you. So we've been marathoning the show, and so it just seemed ridiculously appropriate to name it Babylon 5 because we were in the midst of it when I got the first positive. So okay, let's get
cute. It makes me wonder what you would have named this pregnancy if you'd been in the middle of something, say, oh my gosh, what was the one that just came out recently? Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, well, I love Battlestar. But no, actually, there was an alternate name before Babylon 5 actually won the name contest. Because there was. It was Stormageddon Dark Lord of All.
Oh my god.
Wait, is that the name for the pregnancy or like what you're calling the baby?
The fetus embryo baby
Like what I call turtle.
Yeah, like your turtle, because I have a thing, like, if we're going to name, you know, if we're going to come up with pithy nicknames, then the nickname should be, like, you know, serious. And it was a really huge problem, because we basically, like, this is going to be, like, very dark and terrible, but we basically, like, blew all our good nicknames on Nadav. And we're not going to, you know, reuse any of Nadav's nicknames. So we had to
come no, up with, no.
Yeah, so we had to come up with, like, new stuff. And so if there are any Doctor Who fans out there, there's an episode of Doctor Who where he claims to speak baby, and he talks to a baby who's like a couple months old, whose parents named him Alfie, and Doctor Who tells, you know, the father, he's like, his name isn't Alfie, it's Stormageddon, Dark Lord of All.
Mm-hmm.
and the father's like, how do you know this? And Doctor Who says, I speak baby. So, mm-hmm. so we were gonna name the fetus embryo, whatever is growing up in my ute, Stormageddon, Dark Lord of All, but then Babylon 5 came up, and we're like, okay, Babylon 5 it is, because it's appropriate, because it's pregnancy number 5, and, you know,
yeah.
And we're watching Babylon 5, so it works. So, okay, so let's just get, like, the technical stuff out of the way. I'm about 5 weeks, 5 days right now. I have done 2 betas. I'm not doing any more betas. The 2 betas, like, the beta doubled nicely. So the RE's office didn't think that there was any need to get another one. I don't really think that there is either. I also didn't.
No, I mean, the numbers you showed me, yeah. They look good. They yeah. look really good.
So my first beta at 12 DPO was 70, and my second beta, which was at 14 DPO, was 330. So
yeah, and that one, nice. That one I told Gray, and he looked at me and said, "Wow,
yeah,
that's good."
Yeah, it's really good, and so I'm actually not concerned about an ectopic either. So that's why I let them schedule my first ultrasound for January 14th, which by then hopefully we'll see a heartbeat. So the reason, like, here's the thing, listeners, and I know that, you know, anybody who's been reading me for a while and, like, all of my, you know, blah, blah preaching about being open and honest about everything, I'll be honest with you. I was having a really hard time coming out with this pregnancy and not, it's really weird. It's actually because I'm feeling pretty good about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I'm feeling like when I was pregnant with Nadav, Christy, you and I were talking about this. When I was pregnant with Nadav, I started freaking out the day I got my first positive, and I didn't stop freaking out for a second during the entire mm-hmm. pregnancy. I was insane, like
mm-hmm.
crazy. Like starting from like day one, I would have like hysterical crying fits on a daily basis, just out of sheer, you know, panic. And the weird thing is,
was it because of any one thing, or was it just like just panic?
It was panic. I remember crazy. It was everything from pain on a lot of things,
pain on a lot of things. Oh yeah.
To being convinced that, I mean, you had some light bleeding early on, so you were convinced you were miscarrying. In fact, there was one post I remember where you talked about going in to see the Russian.
Yeah.
And you basically plopped yourself up onto the exam bench, prepared yourself, and looked at him, and you're like, "Want me.
Yeah.
Want me now."
Yeah.
And he complied, but you said at the time, the look he gave you,
yeah.
you were like, "I don't care, I'm so freaked out." And what was calming you down was actually the ultrasounds and seeing.
Yeah.
Seen a dog grow.
Yeah.
But other than that, you were pretty freaked out for the most
part. I was freaked the fuck out. Now, just so you guys have some context, since, like, I quit smoking 2 days before my positive pregnancy test, the second I got a positive pregnancy test, under the instructions of my psychiatrist, I actually cut my antidepressant dosage in half.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not freaked out.
Yeah.
This is the thing. I am not freaked out at all. I am so fucking zen that I think that's probably why I don't want to talk about it. Because, like, basically, when the only time my state of zen gets a little, like, shaken up is when my mom calls me, because my mom's freaking out. My mom's scared. And so whenever she calls me and starts asking me questions about, like, what's next and what tests need to be done and all this other stuff, that's when, you know, my peace gets a little shaken up. But, like, other than that, I'm, you know, I'm calm. Schmerson's calm. We're pretty much convinced everything's going to be fine. We're really optimistic. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm optimistic. I think everything's going to be okay. And
I think this is something we need to talk about. And I don't know if we can get to it this podcast.
Yeah. Well,
but definitely, it's one of the things I see. So the reality is you go through infertility, you learn a lot more than I would say most of the population.
Yeah.
We just were surrounded by information. And because of that, it's hard not to panic and to worry about every little step of the way. I mean, I've watched women I know go through at least 3 to 4 packs of pregnancy tests in a day.
Oh, by the way, can I just say I've only peed on 5 things?
Right, which is amazing too.
Yeah.
Like, and I know for a fact, I sent you ordered 2 packs.
I have one pack that is unopened, and I have one leftover Rolls Royce that I haven't used.
Which is just, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
Because that's completely out of character for you.
Yeah.
So, but the thing that I'm trying to get at is, as much as we go through and pee and check and, you know, obsess about numbers and obsess about levels and obsess about all this other stuff, you miss out on a lot of things. Like, it amazes me that you could easily go through your entire pregnancy being scared shitless and not enjoying the moments, and then all of a sudden have a baby in your arms and be looking back, and then you're mourning and grieving not having a pregnancy. It's like storm for all the shit in life happening. So,
well, here's the thing that really, I think, clinched it. It's the second that I peed on that stick and I saw that second line, I cried tears of joy. And this was the last time I cried tears of joy over a positive pregnancy test was my first pregnancy. That was almost 3 years ago. And all of a sudden, here I am crying tears of joy. And the second that happened, I just realized, okay, this is different, because I'm crying tears of joy now. I'm not sitting here freaking the fuck out. I'm happy. And it's really been funny, because apart from my parents, who are freaking out immensely, every single other person who has heard about this pregnancy has been just as happy. And again, when I announced my pregnancy with Nadav, there was a lot of like, oh, okay, let's hope, you know, let's be cautiously optimistic, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this time, every single person who I said, I went up and said, I'm pregnant, they were jumping up and down cheering.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's just an energy thing. I don't know. It's weird. I have to share this. I was at my therapist's, and I came in like the day after my positive pee stick, and I was completely zen. And then I was like, okay, well, let's make an appointment for next week, because we've been down to 2 weeks, once every 2 weeks, because I can't really afford a weekly thing. But I was like, let's make an appointment for next week, because I'm obviously going to be freaking out by next week. So I come into her office this week, and I'm not freaking out. And I sit down in front of her, and I'm like, why am I not freaking out? What the hell is wrong with me? And she's like, because you've done all of the work that you need to not freak out now.
And this was what Dee was getting at, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember that, where she talked about the fact that really analyzing things?
Yeah.
I agree with her. I think you've done everything you need to do.
Yeah. She's like, you've done the work, and now you're reaping the rewards of the really hard work that you've been doing here for the last few months. It's okay that you're calm. You deserve to be calm. And this has been like the mantra. Like, when I go to bed, it's take a few deep breaths and say, I am worthy of a healthy pregnancy. I am worthy of a healthy pregnancy. And it's, you know, and it's been enough to keep me, you know, not to say, you know, people who don't get healthy pregnant don't deserve it, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you beat yourself up to the point where you at one point think, I'm never going to see this. This is never going to happen for me. And by saying I'm worthy of a healthy pregnancy, in some ways I become calmer because then my own insecurities don't play a part in my anxiety. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it does. It makes complete sense.
Yeah. So it's
And it's you know, I mean, I think what the thing to emphasize here is neither of us are, or any of us here, are saying that for women that, you know, if you go through a trauma of a miscarriage or finding out that your baby has a birth defect, that somehow you're any less worthy of a healthy pregnancy.
Yeah, no, not even.
That's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
But I think what happens so often is that we get ourselves worked up with the fact that there's something wrong with us and we are cursed and we've brought this curse on ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's so much guilt that comes along with this journey. There is so much fucking guilt. And just letting go of that guilt, I think, has been a really big part of this kind of freeing, revelatory thing that's going on. And I mean, granted, there's still moments. Yesterday I had my first moment of true anxiety. And honestly, now that I'm talking about it, I'm a little anxious. I feel really weird talking about my optimism. It freaks me out a little to talk about how, you know, how I'm not freaked out.
Right. No, I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you the whole way because we're so conditioned to be freaking out.
Yeah.
And everybody expects that we are supposed to be freaking out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hear you. I remember looking at women that weren't freaking out and thinking you were so fucking naive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would you not prepare yourself for the worst possible thing?
But yeah, but this is exactly what you were getting at earlier, Christy. It's like, okay, well, let's say the worst case scenario happens. How am I helping it by being hysterical for the next 2 weeks until my first ultrasound? How is that helping anything right now? Why not just be, you know, as calm as possible and hope for the best and just be like, you know?
And enjoy it. I mean, the thing is to enjoy it. And I think that's the thing that we've gotten so good at is we don't let ourselves enjoy this process. We're so spooked.
Yeah.
We don't actually enjoy it. And I hate to say it, but I also wonder, at least for the women that go all the way through their pregnancies where they're completely neurotic messes.
Yeah.
Part of me wonders if, you know, we know for a fact that you really stress hormones and that those stress hormones affect the baby.
Yeah.
They affect their development. They affect their brain activity, other things like that. And again, I'm not saying that you're directly causing harm to your child, but you hear about high maintenance kids coming out of high risk pregnancies.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, this is part of the other thing.
Just wonders, like, were your stress hormones so high that you now have a kid that's so used to being hopped up on being stressed?
Well, see, here's the thing, because I've got a high risk pregnancy. Like, nothing, no matter how zen I am, nothing is changing the fact that if all goes as planned on February 19th, which is 2 days before Nadav's birthday, like anniversary of when we lost him, February 19th, I'm going into bed, and if all goes well, I'm not coming out until September. Which is, you know, that's a little freaky. But there's, I think that there's a part of me that's almost looking forward to that at this point, because I've spent 8 months preparing myself mentally and emotionally for that. And I'm ready for that too. And I'm really hoping that I don't freak out then. Like, I'm really hoping that the zen continues. I'm assuming that if all goes well, and if we hit, once we hit the about the same time that, you know, when we lost Nadav, once we hit 22 weeks, there's probably going to be a couple of weeks of, like, not happy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But...
No.
You know, at this point, I really, and this is kind of my feeling is if I make it to the bed rest, like if this baby's got a healthy heartbeat and's got, you know, the NT scan comes out great, then I'm making it, maybe not full term, but pretty damn close. I'm going to make it because at that point, you know, there's stuff I can control. There's stuff I can't control. I can't control whether I have a healthy embryo in me right now, but I can control never getting out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's something in my control. And so I'm just not going to get out of bed. And the second I'm not going to, and that gives me, and it's not the illusion of control. That's true control.
No, I agree.
So
I agree.
You know, that's something I control, and I can feel better about it. But anyway, we can go on about this for hours.
We can, and I mean, Shelley, it brings back to what Shelley was talking about at the beginning, as far as most infertiles tend to be, and RPLers tend to be type A people, or you become type A.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you learn through this journey is how to give up control.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have a choice. Because even if you think you are going to magically control your pregnancy, if you somehow delude yourself all the way through,
yeah,
and you do get your baby home, let's talk about parenthood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that, there's just no way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, listeners, if you haven't yet heard the episode with Denise, which is episode 15, go back and listen to it now, because this is exactly what we touched on that episode about really the only solution is letting go of control. That's the only way. And I think that Christy, both, and I think all three of us, if there's a journey that we've been going through since the beginning of this podcast up until now, is learning that, what can we do? You know, the universe is the universe, and it gives us what it gives us, and we've just got to learn to deal with it and take it as it comes, roll with the punches, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. And listeners, please don't hate us if all of us are pregnant next week.
I think the thing that we'll do is we will discuss it. We will talk about it, because obviously, going to a podcast where all the hosts are pregnant and you're stuck in the trenches sucks.
Yeah,
it's really a hard thing. So we're sensitive to that, and we've already been talking about this.
Yes, because we're optimistic, we think Christy's going to be knocked up too. Let's just be honest. We think Christy's going to be knocked up. And then it's going to be all three of us. And all you listeners are going to hate us and be like, God, screw you. But, you know, we have been thinking about this. And apart from the fact that we will be selling podcast hosting as the ultimate infertility cure.
Absolutely.
Yes. We will be packaging it and bottling it. Like, be in a podcast, get pregnant. It's just the way it works. So apart from that, we are sensitive to this. By the way, listeners, we welcome your emails on this, because we've got a couple of ideas for solutions, but we also want to hear from you, what your thoughts are on this, because we're not going to quit, because we know what we do here is important, and you know, we get emails from you guys every day about how much we help and we support, we love doing this, and we don't want to stop doing it. But, you know, there is a question, because we're optimistic right now, and we think Christy's going to get knocked up, and now I'm knocked up, and, you know, so it gets to be complicated. So email us, bitterinfertiles@gmail.com, and we will talk about this, because we really want to hear from you as far as what you guys think.
Right.
Your feedback is really important. Okay, so on the line with us now is... one of my favorite bloggers, who we will not share her first name with you guys because of her situation. She prefers to remain anonymous, but we all know her as Miss OK. So, hi, Miss OK. Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Yay.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're happy to have you. So, if you don't mind, for the, I'm assuming very few listeners who don't know your story, if you don't mind sharing a little bit of your story with our listeners, that would be awesome.
Sure. I started blogging in 2010. We started trying to conceive in 2009 and had our first positive test in 2010. And I had a first trimester miscarriage in February of 2010. And then I had a second one in June 2010. And then I had a third one in November 2010. And then we moved on to adoption. And so we started right away in November of 2010 adopting from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And 15 months later, we brought our daughter home this past February.
Oh, congratulations.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Her gorgeous daughter, who I get to see pictures of all the time. She's amazing. Because Ms. OK and I are Facebook friends, so yeah, I'm special. So basically, you chose not to explore tests. You just chose to move straight on to adoption.
Yeah, we did some tests in between the second and the third miscarriages, and then I found out later that they actually had been done too close to the prior pregnancy to actually have told us anything useful. I was not seeing an RE. I sort of had it in my head that two miscarriages wasn't serious enough to go see a real doctor, and so I was just sticking with my OB, who was not very conversant in fertility problems. And so I did have some tests done that didn't really lead to any results. And then after the third pregnancy, we just decided to move on to adoption. I did since then go to a specialist in recurrent pregnancy loss and had some more blood tests done that didn't result in anything. And there were some other tests that she recommended that we just decided not to proceed with because we're going to build our family through adoption again in the future. So we have closed the trying to conceive book, and I'm glad to have done so.
See, I think this is the thing about having read Miss OK from very early on in my journey. The reason I love Miss OK so much is because she just, you know, took shit in her own hands and said, this is the decision and I'm going to do this. And it's so, you know, so many women put their bodies through hell, myself included. And Miss OK loved herself and her sanity and did what was right thing for her to build her family. And I just love and respect you so much for that. Truly.
I appreciate that. I, you know, I go back and forth. Sometimes I feel like that was a strong decision. And sometimes I think, gosh, so many people go through so much worse. Why couldn't I stick it out and keep trying? But the fact is, we didn't really want to. We wanted to have a child, and adoption was the way for us.
Right. And I'll actually counter. So you're right. There's a lot of people that put themselves through a lot.
Yeah.
And we'll do years of treatment and other things like that. But those women that tend to do years and years and years of treatment become what's known as drifters, meaning that they're not really making decisions. They're just doing what's known. And I think one of the things that you've done is you, in order to do adoption, you really have to analyze your decisions, why you're doing what you're doing. It's not a default. It really is an involved process. And so I think in a way, it's actually, as Mo was just getting at, it's actually a lot healthier because, yeah, I mean, it's with each person, it's your own decision about how far you're going to take things. But we've talked about this here quite a bit, always having a plan. How far are you going to go? And I don't necessarily know if people do 10 rounds of IVF if they really know where they're going to go. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the easier thing for us is that my husband and I had already talked about adoption even before we had any difficulties. And so getting on the same page was a lot easier for us than it is for some couples.
Right. That's great. Yeah. That's really great.
So Miss OK, the reason that we have you on today is because we wanted somebody who is kind of understands international adoption. And you wrote a great piece for the Pale blog, Parenting After Infertility and Loss, about the Russian adoption ban. And so this is really what we wanted to talk about today, is the Russian adoption ban. So I was wondering, hoping you could give us a bit of a background of what the hell's going on.
Other than growling at Putin, who
is
a fucking idiot. I will say this now. He is a fucking self-centered idiot.
Okay.
But go ahead,
if we're talking Putin, anybody go on the Rachel Maddow Show's website and just do a search for video sections about Putin. They are obsessed with showing Putin shirtless and making fun of it.
Nice.
It's hilarious. So if you feel like, you know, letting out a little frustration, go ahead and do that. So, okay. So why, talk us through what the heck's going on over there.
Okay, so I'll start off with my disclaimer that I'm not an expert on Russian adoption. We looked into it a little bit, but just so far as, you know, any couple that decides to adopt internationally looks at the countries that are commonly adopted from in the United States, and that was one of them. So I knew a little bit about it already, but what happened with this adoption ban is that, right, there was a Russian man who worked for an American law firm, and he uncovered a massive tax fraud by the police, and so he made public accusations, and the police arrested him and tortured him, and he died in their custody.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
And so a few years later now, the United States just enacted a bill earlier in December where they were attempting to blacklist those Russians and other human rights violators, and specifically those Russians who were involved in his death, and they were blacklisted from entering the United States or using the U.S. banking system.
Yes.
And Russia was very offended by this, and according to all of the news media, the adoption ban was passed in retaliation for that law.
But it's been interesting because how the Russian parliament has gotten everything through so quickly is not because they have revealed they are not good at revealing their true actions. Most politicians are not. We've got to be honest. This is not just something that's based in Russia. What they've used has been all these horrendous cases that have happened here in the United States.
Yes, and there have been a few circumstances where the notable ones that I had also mentioned in the Pale blog that I wrote, the most notable was the Tennessee woman who sent her adopted son from Russia back to Russia by himself on an airplane with a note pinned to his chest that she couldn't take care of him any longer.
Yeah, that was lovely.
Yes.
dummy alert number one.
And the bill was named after a boy who died, I think it was last year, who was adopted from Russia, whose American father had left him in a hot car all day, and he died. And he was prosecuted in the United States, but found that it was inadvertent.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the thing that's just amazing to me is the fact that you can leave a child alone for 9 hours in a hot car and you get off scot-free. And there were no manslaughter charges or anything brought against this individual.
Once saw an Oprah episode. I have to say this. I'm going to, cut you off here. This is off topic a little bit, but we should do this. I actually saw an episode of Oprah where a woman who had accidentally done this to her child went on the Oprah show and explained what had happened. And basically what had happened is that she, her daily routine did not involve dropping off her child at daycare. That was her husband's job. And the one day she, she had to drop him off, but because she was so used to just getting in the car and going to work, and she hadn't gotten enough sleep that night, she got in the car and she just went to work like she usually did. She was just so much on autopilot that she didn't, she neglected to remember that it was that for the first time in months she had to drop her child off at daycare.
I saw that episode too, and I think the child was asleep in the back seat, and she just never even looked back there.
Yeah,
right. So, there are circumstances, but it's. I don't know. I hear what you're saying, that there is we all make mistakes as humans. We all forget things in the car and we go from there. But I'll be honest, it's not uncommon for me to walk out and see people leave their dogs in the car for hours on end. Mm-hmm. I have seen people get in the habit of, I'm just running inside quick to go and grab a latte. So they leave their kids in the car. So I think, unfortunately, people also get into this habit of thinking, it's okay for just a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a slippery slope, because if it's okay for a couple of minutes as they get older, well, then it's okay for an hour, right? Yeah. And we know that those cars get so hot. So there's more details than we're probably covering. But the point is this is what Russia has glommed onto to give the public for why they have passed this bill. And that's basically painting the United States as this evil country where they take their orphans, they take these children, and they're killing them. Or we're enlisting them in the military and using them as weapons against Russia.
The U.S. State Department tracks the number of adoptions, at least it has since 1999, and there have been 45,000 Russian orphans adopted in the United States, and the number that have met tragic consequences is very few.
Mm-hmm.
Probably statistically the same, if you take the percentage of children in general that have met tragic consequences, and this is the amount of children of Russian, orphans who've been adopted that have met tragic consequences. I'm assuming the percentages are the same. Here's the question, though. Now, are they idiots? Because seriously, the U.S. adoption of Russian orphans is pretty significant, I would think, in terms of
It's pretty low. So, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting. Please answer.
Yeah, there are something like 700,000 orphans in Russia that are available for adoption, and Putin says his goal is to find all of those that were going to be adopted by Americans and find homes for them in Russia, which is all well and good if it really happens, but it's unlikely to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure the exact statistics on this, but I know a lot of Americans who are looking to adopt children with special needs often go to Russia. So I've been reading accounts of adoptive parents who were in the process with Russia right now who are adopting a child with spina bifida or with Down syndrome. And those children would be extremely difficult to place in Russia. And so it's especially tragic for them.
Yeah, I think there was an article that just came out that was shared through another listserv where it was actually put on the Chicago Tribune. And they talked about the fact that most children, before they are available to be adopted internationally, they spend at least 9 months being available to be adopted to the Russian public.
Yeah, that makes sense too, because in Israel, you can't if you're adopting from Russia in Israel, the average age of the child that you'll be adopting is a year and a half. So that actually, you know, that makes sense that they, you know, that explains why the average age of adoption is a year and a half. Speaking of, the ban is only in the United States, so like other international, other countries can still continue to adopt.
Right.
That's correct.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. That's still sucky. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's still completely sucky, but I find there's actually adoptions in progress right now that have been stopped.
Yeah, so there was approximately 24, I think, that were literally, the paperwork was signed. They were just waiting for the passport to bring the child over.
Oh, wow.
And it stopped.
Apparently, under Russian law, after the final court decree where you were named the legal guardian of the child, there's a 30-day waiting period. And there were a number of families who were in that 30-day waiting period. So they're legally the child's parents, but may not be able to get the child out of the country.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's terrible. Just cruelty. Seriously, that's cruelty, not only for the parent, I mean, for the child as well, because I'm assuming these people have met the children. At this point.
Yes. Russia requires 2 to 3 visits. The parents can do it in 2 visits if they stay longer the second time, I believe, or a lot of parents do 3 visits instead. So they may have met 2 or 3 times already.
Yeah.
Wow. Can I ask a question? And I don't know. I mean, I haven't done that much reading on this. I don't know if we even know this at this point. But, I mean, what are the chances that this is going to be somehow reversed or amended? I mean, is this just it forever, or is there a chance that something will change?
I don't really know if there's any precedent for this type of thing that's come up, because most of the countries that I'm aware of who've had their adoption programs closed, it's because there was fear of child trafficking or something like that going on, and so the country closed the adoptions for a while in order to pass better laws to make sure that didn't happen in the future, with the intent of reopening it again. So I don't know if there have been other countries that have passed a law like this in retaliation. So I'm not sure.
Has anyone ever banned a specific, like one country specifically? Like you can't, you,
oh,
one
yeah,
country,
I can
you
tell
cannot.
You now that Israel is banned by some
from
people.
Russia?
Yeah,
oh,
not
okay.
From Russia, but from there are specific countries who purposely do not let, actually a lot of countries do not let Israeli couples adopt because of politics.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. And that's, I think, a lot of it is you are looking at international relations. So unfortunately, with Russia, the thing that the United States has a hot history with Russia between being in the Cold War. And then even though things were looking pretty good there for a while in the late 80s and through the 90s, Putin coming in has really, I mean, it's been rocky during the 12 years he's been in office.
Yeah.
And so this is really what all this is. It's a political ploy. So unfortunately, until somebody assages this politician's ego and the other politician's ego and they feel safe once again, it's pretty much, I mean, it's heartbreaking, but I would not bank on Russia as a country that you can adopt from for a while.
No, that's
so... And it's really hard for the parents in the process. It probably depends on how far along in the process they are. Mm-hmm. But if they've been matched with a child, or especially if they're already the legal parents of a child, they feel much more connected to that country and that child and want to try to complete it if at all possible. Someone who maybe is just starting out is maybe... not matched with a child yet or not that financially into their adoption, and they would be able to switch to another country without much trouble. But, you know, I really feel very sorry for the parents who were far along in the process, and, of course, for the kids, too.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting and sad what you said in your post on Pale, Miss OK, about, you know, how this is probably going to scare, you know, people who are just considering international adoption at all,
yeah,
kind of scare them out of the process. I mean, I hate to say it, but if we were in that place right now, it probably would make me think twice. You know, I mean, it's horrifying, the stories you're hearing about these poor people who are so close and yet now so far.
Yeah, and as I wrote in the blog, that when you're adopting internationally, you're always aware that something like this might happen, and so you feel like you're under the gun all of the time trying to get the next step completed. But international adoption can take a long time, but it's usually on a time frame that's more predictable, which is why some people prefer international adoption. But it becomes unpredictable because you can't control what another country is going to do with their laws. But there are so many different steps that have to take place, and you can't finish the one until the previous step has finished. And so with our adoption, we had to be approved by our state, and then we were approved by the United States, and then we sent our dossier, it's called, over to the Congo, and we were approved there, and we became our daughter's parents, and then we had to have another set of approvals from the United States that she was an orphan, and then we had to get her a visa and a passport. They re-examined her past at that point, mm-hmm, to make sure that she was truly an orphan, mm-hmm, and then Congo gave exit approvals, and then she came home. And right, so that was 15 months for us, which for an international adoption is pretty fast.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is the same exact process in that order for Russia, and I believe it takes longer for Russia even than that.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's interesting to watch how all this has gone down. Russia, outside of what's recently been happening, Russia has been one of those countries where there's been a lot of criticism of how they do the adoption process, mainly because of the fact that I've heard that you don't always get a lot of information about the children. Yeah. They're not as forthcoming about the information, about their history, about other things along those lines. And there's even been cases of bait and switching where people have come over from the United States, been told, you know, introduced to a child, told this is the child that they're going to be adopting, and then they find out after like the third visit, oh, actually, no, this is the child instead you're going to be adopting. And I don't know how common that is, but I do know that there's been, of all the international countries, it seems to be Russia keeps coming up as the one that you were always hearing problems about. And I do know that NPR actually had a series of guests on that talked about the fact that the Russian system really does need to go through some, it needs to go through some reform with their orphanages, how they handle orphans, how they how the country views orphans themselves, yeah, because adoption's not that big there. Yeah. And so the reform that needs to happen there in order to really be healthy for the kids is really key. So it's a big, messy ball with a lot of different things. And
well, maybe the upside is that because of this law, maybe they'll be forced to kind of reexamine the way they treat adoption in that country. I mean, maybe. I mean, this is me being an eternal optimist, but I mean, it could possibly happen that now that they've got, you know, this, let's say, extra burden of having to care for all these children that now, you know, don't have their what was supposed to be their forever families, maybe it'll make them change some policies. But I'm wondering, are the families that are already legal guardians of the kids, do they have any hope of getting these kids out?
That's a good question.
Well, the State Department has issued some statements to Russia, you know, asking Russia to please find a way to complete the adoptions that were already in progress. I believe there was one Russian lawmaker who attempted to introduce a bill to at least allow the adoptions of children with special needs to go forward. Mm. So there might be a glimmer of hope in both of those circumstances that they could at least finish some of the ones that were very close to being done. Mm-hmm. But I don't know in the short term if anything bigger than that could be reversed.
Well, you know, as a parent who has successfully completed international adoption, can you give our listeners, those considering this, some hope? Well, obviously, by the fact that you've had this, the process be successful, you're already, you know, giving hope. But you know, some final words of encouragement about the process, maybe, so they don't feel quite so discouraged.
Sure. I think that when you're starting out with an international adoption, the best thing to do is research and try to find as stable as a program as possible. There have been some warning signs that things might go this way with Russia. And so as you're looking at a country, you can look for red flags that might lead to problems like this and try to avoid them to the extent possible. International adoption is so rewarding. And with our daughter being adopted from the Congo, there are between 5 and 8 million orphans there, and 3 in 10 children die by the age of 5 due to lack of resources and disease there. And so it's just really rewarding to know that she's safe and that I have made an impact in at least one person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she's just so happy such a great little kid, and we do everything we can, and we know most other adoptive parents do too, to keep them connected to their cultures. Mm-hmm. And try to find holidays to celebrate and foods to cook and find cultural events to attend so that these children keep the ties to their birth country.
So you mentioned before that you plan on, you know, this is how you're going to build your family, is through adoption. With your next adoption, are you planning on going back to the same country, or are you thinking of expanding your search to other countries or even domestic?
Unless something changes with Congo, we plan to go to that country again. We would like our daughter to have a sibling with the same cultural ties that she has.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Well, Ms. OK has written some fantastic blog entries about her international adoption journey. And we will be linking that up on our blog, just sharing some amazing resources and some wonderful stories there. So if you want to learn more about that, then come to our blog for links to Miss OK's blog, which I believe is missok.wordpress.com. Am I right?
That's correct. And OK has an H in it, O-H-K-A-Y.
O-H-K-A-Y. Okay, so check out
because
her blog.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, because okay was already taken, so I had to put an H in it.
well, and in case you didn't catch that, we will link up to a couple of her best posts about her adoption process on our blog as well. And thank you so much for being on the show with us today. It was enlightening and informative. We really appreciate it.
Great. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so now we talked about international adoption, and now we have to talk about the thing I think that's been on all of our minds.
Oh, no, I don't wanna. No!
We need to bitch.
No! This is where I was just was on, because I know she would whine and complain as much as I am.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'll bitch on your behalf.
Thank you.
Listen, it's got to be done, because you know very well that if we don't talk about it, we're going to get like 20,000 emails being like, hey, how come you guys didn't talk about Kim Ye? And
because Kim Ye is both of them together are collective idiots. So is it surprising they're able to breathe? No.
Oh,
should anybody in the press be paying attention to it? No. Because you know why? If you pay attention, that's what they live for. They live in the center of the spotlight. So the more you talk about them, the more they're like, I mean, they derive their life energy from it. So it's like any other thing out there. You don't water a plant, it doesn't live. I'm proposing you just dump, you know, a shitload of weed killer on the plant.
It's never going to happen.
Oh,
yeah. It's never going to happen. Go ahead.
No, you go. Because I just had a stupid joke, yeah.
I was just going to say, I'll admit that as I can't even describe the moment when I saw on Facebook that was a true fact. But as like horrifying and annoying and it's so many things that it is, I kind of want to watch the season where she finds out she's pregnant. I mean, I hate myself for that.
Oh,
but dear. I kind of want to see it happen.
And I want to watch the season when Child Protective Services comes, looks at the family and says, uh-uh, no. We're sorry.
God.
You're all idiots. And it is the amount of psychological damage you are inflicting on the next generation where the general public is going to have to pay for it. No, we've done Optimum.
Okay, Shelly, I have to say something. Like, you know how much I love me some trashy reality TV, but even I don't want to watch that. I think you have officially won the prize.
Okay, I don't watch every episode, but I've watched quite a bit. Oh, I mean, I don't watch it religiously, but it's like this sick fascination. I don't know what it is about them, but it's like I'm just curious because their lives are so, so different from anything I've ever experienced as reality. And it's fascinating in a way.
Considering that the mother, Kris Jenner, is a pimp. She is literally out her children for her own financial gain. I mean, come on. The fact that you sit down and you publicize your daughter's weddings. I mean, this is not an intimate family event. This is bringing everybody in so that you can make money. She was married to, I don't remember who.
Chris Mr. Humphries.
She's talking about
Kris Jenner.
Chris.
Oh, yeah. She was married to Robert Kardashian.
Right. Who was involved with the OJ? He was the one on the defense team for OJ Simpson.
Right. Yeah,
And the fact that what launched the entire family was a sex tape from Kim. Come on, you're getting your jollies and your money off the fact that your daughter went and got videotaped fucking somebody else.
And not only somebody else, a fucking like D-list celebrity, Ray J. Does anybody know who the fuck Ray J is?
Brandy's brother.
Brandy's brother. I mean, okay, so a couple things. First of all, like I've got my entire base of knowledge about the Kardashians comes from my love of A, the Kevin and Bean Show, which is an LA morning radio show, and B, Hollywood Babylon, which I've mentioned before here is my favorite podcast ever. And so I am going, so my context is on the Kevin and Bean Show, they recap Keeping Up with the Kardashians episodes. That's the closest I've come to ever seeing an episode. And then on.
You probably know more about it than I do if you've heard every recap of every episode.
I've only heard the recaps in the past season because I've only recently started discovered that Kevin and Bean actually have podcasts that you can download and listen to. So only the last season. However, there's two things I want to add to this conversation. One is that Ralph Garman, who hosts Hollywood Babylon, mentioned that his Twitter feed. Somebody said on the day that that Kim Kardashian announced the pregnancy, somebody said that this is yeast meets West. Yeast meets
West.
Yeah, it's terrible. The second thing is he doesn't call her Kim Kardashian. He calls her either porn star Kim Kardashian or fuck tapes.
I love
Kim
it.
Kardashian.
I love porn star Kim Kardashian. That's amazing.
But that's what she is. I mean,
I know.
It's the fact the whole family is taking off. I mean, come on. The fact that the rest of the family is famous based on a sex tape, and then the rest of them have played that up, and then why they are now famous is because of the fact that either the youngest is infertile and her marriage, every other tabloid in her marriage is falling apart, or the fact that the other two are constantly kicking out babies and talking about the fact that they have no intention of doing any type of family planning whatsoever. They're just going to have as many kids as they possibly can.
Okay.
And if that doesn't... Oh.
Okay, anyways. Let me just say this. This is the one thing. I felt so sorry for Khloé when I heard this news. Like, that's the
first
thing
I thought.
Yeah. Poor
Khloé.
Poor Khloé. I mean, seriously, because it's obvious that Kim Ye got pregnant probably from an oops.
Definitely.
And isn't she still married, by the way?
Yes, she's still
legally married to Kris Humphries. So he is officially a cuckold.
Yeah.
No, they will still be married when the baby's born. I heard that on the
show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
under the law, it's technically his child.
Yeah. Well, another gem from Ralph Garman is that she is
more currently further pregnant, further along pregnant than they were married. Like, they were married technically for 72 days, and she's 12 weeks pregnant, which is longer than they were married. So, I mean, yeah. But he's dragging out the divorce, and good for him for doing that, because he's just torturing the fuck out of her, which is great.
Yeah. No, yeah. Definitely. Okay, here's what I thought when I heard it. First was definitely poor Chloe, but also I can't wait to see Kim get fat, because she's so incredibly vain and full of herself that I just hope she explodes. And yeah.
The thing that bothers me about this, okay, so I'm going to bring up a documentary I watched recently called The Queen of Versailles. And this is basically on a real estate mogul who sold timeshares and ended up building one of the largest house in the United States, like over 900,000 square feet or something along those lines. Yeah. His wife has 8 children. There's Holy a 30-year shit. Gap between them. Do you know why she has 8 kids?
Why?
Because she realized, and she says it's during the documentary, she realized she could hire nannies. So she has a total of 5 nannies for her 8 kids, and she does not parent whatsoever.
Oh,
so
God.
The problem is as much, like for most people, if they have one, it's not only that you get fat, you get tired because you're not sleeping, because you're caring for the kid once they're born, and newborns have a lot of needs, and it can be repetitive, and it effectively can get isolating and boring because that's all you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then two, there's the period where you have to go through and raise and other things like that. So being a parent is hard. There's no doubt. She's not going to have to do any of that shit because she's going to hire somebody to do it.
Yeah.
But she's going to have to get fat.
That's true. She's going to have
she can't hire someone to do that. Well, she could have, but not now.
And I mean, seriously, the only let's hope that she has a hell of a hard time losing the weight and that she doesn't pull a Jessica Simpson and just get pregnant again because she can't lose the weight.
Let's not even go there yet.
Yeah.
The other thing was I saw an interview with her on the red carpet from like a week ago, and they were like, how's pregnancy been so far? And she's been like, it's been really hard. You know, I can't say I've enjoyed it. Everyone seems so happy during pregnancy, but I have to say it's been really hard. But then they're like, so what have you been experiencing? Have you been having like really bad morning sickness? And she's like, no morning sickness so far. Just some pains, just some growing pains, but, you know, it's been really hard. And it's like, for me, just from where I've been for the past 3.5 months, I'm like,
yeah.
What? What? What is so hard? What has been so hard, honestly? I mean, what?
Yeah.
Like, no morning sickness, but it's been so hard. Like, I don't know. Maybe she's in pain. She didn't look like she was in pain when she was strutting around the red carpet in like a lace onesie or whatever she was wearing.
F her so much. Seriously.
Right? No, but the only thing, the saving grace is you realize that those kids, starting with Kourtney Kardashian's kids all the way down to this new little bundle of joy, are going to come back. And there's either going to be two things that happen. One, they're going to be so messed up and pissed off that they are going to burn through that fortune in approximately 10 years.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to have it because they're all going to be in rehab trying to recover from the burned out mansions. Mm. Or what I'm really hoping for is that they become so disgusted that they just effectively disown the family and go off and lead wonderful lives.
Well, here's
or they'll be just like them. It'll just generation.
There's no middle. I don't want the middle because the middle is bad. The middle is it just can't be that way. I mean, it's like any other tyrant out there. The first generation is bad. Let's use Kim Jong-il as a great example here.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the current processor, his son, who has never lived a life of hardship, he's just going to – I mean, there's already reports coming out that he is completely delusional, completely – he's actually worse than his father as far as his beliefs on how important he is and his self-importance and his narcissism and how effectively he abuses people. Mm-hmm. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same. It's either going to go way downhill into new levels of white trash that we've never seen and never knew existed, and Hollywood's going to love it, or – what I'm really hoping for is that they're just basically going to turn around and be like, Mom, you're fucking crazy. You're going to and tell them at the age of 40, I am sticking you in a nursing home. Somebody can deal with your shit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go off and I'm going to live a life. And I'm going to get married. And I'm going to do everything the opposite that you've done because I am so disgusted with the way that I was brought into the world.
Well, here's
I love how Christy didn't want to talk about this at all.
I know. She's so ranting. Here's my favorite thing. And I think I've said this before when we talked about Toddlers and Tiaras, which is, you know, my guilty reality TV show pleasure is I cannot wait for the tell-all book. I can't wait for the tell-all book by Octomom's Kids, and I can't wait for the tell-all book by you know, Kim Ye Jr. And this is, I think this is the part that I think pisses Christy off, and in all honesty, pisses me off too, because this is going to sound terrible, but I don't care, since when have we been polite on the show? Kim Ye's kid is probably going to get a rough deal, because spoiled, rotten kids are just as abused. Oh, as children who are, like, that is child abuse. It's completely different.
Yeah, they're neglected. Yeah. Terrifyingly so.
And so. It's so obvious she's going to wear this child like an accessory, and that just disgusts me.
Yeah, and actually, wasn't there a Jersey Shore star that just announced that she wants a baby within a year? JWoww. It just came out of the same thing. Though, I want a baby within a year. You know for a fact, it's the same thing. It's an accessory. It's to get more publicity.
Yeah.
The reality is that if any of these people were actually held accountable to actually be parents, it would be like Paris Hilton's trend of getting little dogs.
Yeah.
They'd be gone.
Yeah. Yep. Obviously the reason that JWoww wants a child now is because Jersey Shore just had its final episode, and she needs to still have the heat on so that people will actually care when she gets pregnant. And she's aware of that. And that's really sad. That's really, really sad. But that's just the reality of celebrity culture, and that's disgusting. So, yay, good stuff. But let's wrap it up for now, because we could go about this on about this for hours. And you know what, listeners, let's be honest. We're going to rant about this next week, too. It's the gift that keeps on giving. So if
there's going to be something every week about this.
Of course there is.
That we can comment on.
Yes. So, listener, and, you know, maybe we'll talk about Jessica Simpson next week. That's yet another gift that keeps on giving. So, listeners, email us with your Kim Ye rants or with solutions on how to deal with the fact that hopefully all three of us will get pregnant. Be pregnant by the end of next week's show, and you know, just rant and curse us out, whatever you want. Email us bitterinfertiles@gmail.com. Go to our website bitterinfertiles.wordpress.com, and follow us on Twitter @bitterinfertile without the S. And yes, that's about it for now, and we will see you next week.
Okay, bye everyone.
Bye everyone. See you next week.
Bye.